Welcome back to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast, where we bring you the numbers, the narratives from the accounting profession. I'm Rob Brown. Today, we're talking about something that sits at the foundation of how firms operate, make decisions, and position themselves for the future. And that topic is governance. Joining us today are two gentlemen that know a lot about this, Gary Thompson and David Bundy of Thompson Consulting. Gentlemen, I'm going to get you in to introduce yourself in just a moment, but thank you for joining us on what is a very important topic.
Thanks for having us,
Rob. Thank you, Rob. It's good to be with you.
So, Gary, tell us a little bit about you and your world, and we'll get a quick introduction from David as well, and then we'll get into what will be a two-part episode, because this is such a big topic. We don't just want to gloss over it here on Inside Public Accounting. So, Gary, what does your world look like, and what are you on with?
Yeah, so my world now, Rob, is I serve as an advisor to leaders in CPA firms, 34 years in public accounting, and now click my sixth year as a consultant. So about 40 years in public accounting and governance has been a huge part of the conversation, both as a leader in the firm and now as an advisor to leaders.
And David, tell us about you.
It's honestly very similar to what Gary just said. I've had almost 40 years in public accounting, the last 15 of which leading a small accounting firm into some very high level growth. And getting ready to transition out of that into that advisor role that Gary served. I'm very happy to join him and see what we can do to help some firms out.
Well, it's much needed for sure. Gary, you recently completed a governance project for the AICPA, and so you're bringing a former leader's perspective to this. And David, I know you've got a lot of heritage in the industry. This topic, governance, Gary, let's start with you. It actually means what happens inside an accounting firm and why the principles that may have worked in the past might be holding firms back. So when we say governance in the context of an accounting firm, let's define terms. What does that actually mean or include?
Well, it's a pretty inclusive term. I mean, to me, it's an operating system where you help determine who, how make decisions are made within an organization. So it's not answering every question, but it is all about how we go about making decisions from a legal standpoint, of course, partnership documents and things of that nature. But it's how we go about being able to react to what the market's giving us in terms of speed, who's involved and things of that nature. So, you know, it's pretty encompassing. Obviously, we won't get into as much of the deep details of it today. We tend to easily define governance as a structure, but I think it's much, much greater than that.
Yeah. David, when partners and leaders hear that word governance, they immediately think bylaws and agreements, don't they? But there's more to it than that, right?
It really is. It's how decisions get made. And are you poised to process all that information to make the right decisions at the right time with the right level of support to keep that organization moving forward? It's a connector. Connector to strategy. It's a connector to vision. And it's critical to make sure organizations keep moving forward.
Yeah. And Gary, you've been bold in this and calling this out. You're not necessarily calling governance broken, but it might not be good enough to serve us for the future. Why does that distinction matter right now?
Well, first of all, it matters a lot because I hear a lot in the industry that almost is negative or pessimistic about the past. And I don't feel that way at all. You know, having been through the ebbs and flows of this profession for a while, I think we have been good. We're getting even better at saying what worked in the past and why, but better pinpointing those things that may have worn out their effectiveness. So this is not at all at saying our firm is broken or our governance is broken, but it might be broken as it relates to the speed in which we need to act, with which we need to act today. So look, Dave and I approach this as practitioners, and nothing's worse than getting pummeled or beat on because people are saying you're broken. This is not our approach at all. How can we tip the cap to what made us successful, but at the same time challenge ourselves as to what needs to change going forward? So this is not a casual conversation. It's not meant to get us all stirred up when we don't need to be stirred up, but it is really made to challenge us and say the world, particularly over the last 5 to 6 years, has changed at an incredible pace. Public accounting is not exempt from that. What do we need to do to make sure that we're modifying governance to be able to meet with speed? Things like private equity, M&A, AI, all the things that we may talk about, all of those things are impacted by our ability to make important and sometimes fast decisions And so the question is whether or not the way we've done it's good enough to meet those challenges head on.
Mm. David, I'm just thinking of the quote by Harvey McKay, who wrote Swim with the Sharks, and he said, dig your well before you're thirsty. And it's the idea of doing something before it needs to be done. And we are starting to see cracks, a little leaks appear in governance in accounting firms, and it's under severe pressure right now with all the changes going on. So while we're not calling out broken governance, we are saying that we need to get the house in order, right?
That's right. And in an ideal world, you do it ahead of time, right? You dig the well before you're thirsty, right? But it doesn't always happen that way. As Gary said, the pace of change is so significant. Sometimes you have to get things settled, let dust kind of settle around, and then say, all right, now what's my governance to move to the next step? And healthy firms can do that, right? Healthy leaders can lead through that, and a healthy partner group can accept and adapt to that as you move forward. So I would challenge to say it doesn't have to be done in advance. And honestly, you don't really know all the pieces you have to have in place in advance, right? With so much change that we all face today. But it's one of those things you can never say, I won't look at it. And I think that's where the distinction is. It has to be reviewed. It has to be analyzed. Otherwise, you're not going to be as effective in the future as what you were in the past.
Yeah. Gary, when you look at how firms are operating day to day, and you and David are in firms, you're under the hood, as it were, what does weak governance look like in practice?
Well, you could easily summarize it by saying, if you're a leader of a firm, a managing partner, what are those things that are slowing your decision-making ability down? What are keeping you from meeting the competitive opportunities and challenges that we have, right? So, you know, putting the head on the proverbial pillow at night, the firms that we work with, the typical challenges are we need to have consensus. What an excellent cultural challenge, right? You want that. You desire that. It's made our firm successful. But redefining what consensus looks like and how it's obtained is a big part of it. So I think for most firms, Rob, it's this moving from consensus to something else. That's the biggest challenge in keeping a lot of managing partners and CEOs awake at night. Again, commending, as I said earlier, tipping the cap to why you want that, but also equally looking at it and saying that's probably holding us back in some way to be competitive. In fact, one of the things that I see, Robin, that we see is some smaller firms that have moved to a more corporate, and I'm sure we'll talk about that definition later, form of governance to mimic or mirror what corporate and PE-backed firms are doing, are some of the most successful independent firms. But they have figured out a way to maintain that culture of connectivity, et cetera, but doing it in a different way.
David, when you go into firms, you start to see things are wrong. There are warning signs. There are red lights. There are triggers. When we talk about weak governance, how does that manifest? Gary mentioned a lack of consensus or difficulty moving forward. That sounds like it's a lot of firms, particularly with a partner model. So just identify some of those red flags for us.
I think the first thing is things aren't operating the way you think they should be. You know, when you sit in this chair as a leader and you realize how things worked in the past, how decisions were made, the speed at which you may have been able to move, and all of a sudden that's not working the same way. That's the first things you start to notice. It's just not as efficient as it was. It gets too bad. You realize it's not as effective as it once was. So things just aren't working the way they should be. Based upon your culture, based upon your strategy, based upon your vision, it's not happening. And so you have to realize it's not only who's making the decisions, how the decision makers are supported, how the decisions gets processed, who's all in the room. And those are tough conversations to have, but you know, if you don't have those, then you're going to be basically bound by a decision-making process, a governance structure, if you will, that doesn't support the organization going forward.
And Rob, one of the things we see most frequently in this environment. So if we back up 10 years ago, if on a Friday afternoon, you, Dave, or I received a phone call about a potential experienced hire candidate that was in the market, or maybe even a small firm that wanted to do an M&A deal with us, be acquired by us. The past was those things took weeks to develop. Multiple meetings, multiple people in the room, a lot of people touching it. And in today's environment, PE-backed firms, corporate structured firms, if they learn of that on Friday, by Monday, they've moved. They've had meetings. They put draft LOIs together. They put draft offerings together. And so it isn't that we're looking back at 10 years ago and saying, oh, that I can't believe we used to do it that way. The market then allowed us to move at that pace. And so now one of those ways that we see slowness and governance exhibited is we're losing opportunities. And when we begin losing opportunities, it's a sign that we may need to rethink the way our decisions are being made.
Well, with pace of change, we need to make decisions faster. And David, that is a problem, isn't it? We're making big technology investments. We're making key hires, even deciding on what clients to take on. If you've got a drag in those decision-making processes, that is going to affect the opportunities that a firm can take on.
Absolutely. And there's no guarantee just because you took longer that the decision was actually better. If you set your governance structure right, you can move at a pace that's comfortable, that fits today's market, and still makes the right good decision.
Gary, one of the examples that I know you've come across is when firms come to you with what they think is a succession problem, turns out to be a governance problem underneath, and they don't see that.
They don't, because I mean, governance forms the basis, right, of succession planning, partner comp, and we can go through the list of M&A, of accountability, of pathway to partner. So yes, when they look at it, and we back up and say the succession challenge you're having is because we didn't have in place the governance to allow a managing partner or CEO to drive a formal succession planning process. To ask the same thing of all of us, declare when you think you're going to retire, have a plan around transition of clients, have a plan around transitions of centers of influence, you go down the list. And so, yeah, so in real time, we can't undo the past. But to your point, Rob, it is a symptom. It's a sign that we didn't deal with things correctly in a governance framework. It ought to also then be a warning sign to us if we're looking ahead and saying, oh my goodness, we have a third or a fourth or maybe even half of our partners or owners retiring over the next 5 to 7 years, which is what's going on in the profession. And a governance framework is what allows us to take succession planning to the next level and think about it more holistically. So you're absolutely right. It's one of those symptoms, and that's one of the best symptoms that we have, losing out on opportunities, succession planning challenges. And even, Rob, in that same context, maybe why we're losing some of our most talented people who don't have clarity about what it means to be a partner or even when they may be able to get in the partner room because we have succession planning challenges. So those things are part of a bigger flywheel of conversation around governance.
We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Yeah. Debbie, one of the tensions we see, particularly in firms that are striving for independence, they're resisting the lure of private equity money. They value their autonomy. They value their independence, their brand. Is that autonomy at risk if their governance doesn't evolve to stay strong?
I'd hate to say that their autonomy is at risk and make it a direct connection, but I think that will become a symptom of a weak governance, that their autonomy becomes at risk. And again, I think there's multiple steps that they'd have to face and go through before it gets to that point. But governance affects everything. So you'd see a firm that's not setting a good strategy, that doesn't have a clear vision, that's not moving along, their leadership development is not sound. You're starting to see things like that. All of those collectively puts that autonomy at risk. So although you can't draw a direct line, boy, it causes enough issues that the autonomy does ultimately land at in a risk standpoint.
You're nodding vigorously there, Gary.
Oh boy, Dave said it really well. We hear and admire and work with many firms that desire to be independent, autonomous, whatever words. But when I see firms like that use independence and autonomy as an excuse not to do the hard things, and one of those hard things is to change governance, then that firm is a firm that's in danger for not only losing their autonomy in the future, but losing their autonomy at a discounted value, right? Because they've not done the hard things. And so, you know, been back to a few minutes ago, balancing this tradition that made us what we are, that made us successful, that's brought value to our partners, all on down the list with, yeah, but that maybe isn't good enough for the future. So if we're not willing to do that, there's a really good chance we're going to get that succession planning call that you talked about in a few minutes ago, Rob. We just didn't do the hard stuff.
Yeah. And David, you've worked through your career with probably traditional governance structures. They don't necessarily work today. I'm thinking of that phrase, what got you here won't get you there. And we're in challenging times. So how does traditional governance assumptions work against firms in today's environment?
I think the biggest thing is just the speed at which let me say two things. I think one, speed is obviously a factor. And Gary kind of gave a great analogy earlier and kind of clarified exactly what that is and the need to process decisions faster. But I think the second thing, and probably bigger and one that maybe we don't like to address that well, is you might not have the right people making the decisions. Just because I'm a partner in an accounting firm doesn't mean that I have the expertise to decide what's our next software or who is a great M&A target. I may be a fantastic auditor or a fantastic tax practitioner, but my opinion on whether M&A, this particular opportunity, fits our strategy or not. So to get more professional individuals in making those decisions helps an organization, again, to move forward. Again, it's kind of a hard thing to hit for some folks. You give up in their mind something, status, if you will. But the reality is, for the sake of the organization, you need a more qualified person making that decision.
Gary, you've spoken to many firms, I'm sure, as have I, who think they've got it locked down. We've got a policy for that. We've got a process for that. We've done our governance, but it becomes out of date. And that sneaks up on you, doesn't it?
It does. And it sneaks up on you because of good intentions, not bad intentions. We're not trying to run the firm in the ground. In fact, it's the opposite. And all of us on this conversation know that some of the most expensive governance structures in America are CPA firms, because we take high performing partners who are some of our highest comped people. We put them in a room where we deal with operational items. They're good at it. Many of them have strong instincts towards some of those aspects. But we can do better with our time. We can be in the market, selling high value work, connecting with our clients, developing our people. And to Dave's point, there are other people who are trained to do these operational things and do it really, really well. And so beyond the consensus desire, I think the second biggest thing that I see with firms is they believe they're saving money by doing it themselves. And the reality is, if we got ourselves back to highest and best use and got some of those partners out of the operations, back into the market, back with our people, we'll end up prospering the firm. But it's a hard transition to go through. We're methodical, we're planners, we're fairly conservative, many times financially. Again, we yearn for the consensus. And so I do see this push and pull on, they know it. They I think intellectually, when you have the conversation with them, and maybe even listening to this, get it. But that's for everybody else, not my firm. But Dave and I can share it with you, and I know you know the same, Rob, is there are some of our best business developers in the profession are today sitting in a room talking about things that range from software choices to the color of wallpaper. And those are the folks that highest value is not in that room. So that doesn't make them bad necessarily. Those, oh my goodness, in where we need to be growing at 10% plus pace just to keep up with the changes in cost and technology and all those things. And our best salespeople are sitting in the room worrying about tactical things. And I think that's the struggle, is getting people to see beyond the dollar and cents from just a pure ledger standpoint and think about the opportunity costs.
Mm. David, one of the things I call out with accountants in terms of their advisory position is how they don't realize how good they are. And this phrase proximity bias, where you get so close to what you do and you don't see it as remarkable. But to Gary's point, firms get so insular and so close to what they're doing with their governance, they don't see that it's perhaps leaking or weak. They need that external perspective, like you guys coming in at Thomson Consulting, to just say, hey, have you thought about this? Because generally they haven't.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where you don't stop to think about when again, go back to what we've discussed earlier, things that aren't working well. That's not the first place people look. They don't stop to think about it and evaluate that. And as Gary said, have the hard conversations to move forward. You know, I liken it a little bit to think about the course of your life, how many houses you live in, right? And how different each one is, depending on where you're at with children, a growing family, and then empty nest, et cetera. One thing every one of those houses have in common is a foundation. Governance model is that foundation that supports it. But it is not the same foundation for every house you've ever lived in. At a different stage, you have to have that different foundation to support what you've got. You know, the things inside it, your culture, your values, your vision, all of those things then exist in that, but it's got to be supported by that governance structure.
Yeah. Gary, we touched on the fight for independence in some firms. Others have taken the private equity dollar or acquisitive in their nature. And we're seeing so much activity around PE and mergers and alternative structures. How is that reshaping governance needs for firms that either want to stay independent or be acquired?
Rob, I started my own firm in 1989, and I think back to the market that existed then. And then I think about along the way, many of our changes weren't because something was wrong. It was because competitive environment had changed and changed drastically. And so we don't, for those who desire independence, we don't have to scrap all the cultural elements that make our firm what it is. In fact, there might be some advantages, but in governance, we can't ignore the fact that PE consolidated firms, or even firms our size that have adopted a more corporate form of governance, are going to operate faster, be able to meet some of the opportunities head on, make the investments, talent, technology, whatever, faster. Those are headwinds to us. And as I briefly mentioned a second ago, firms need to be growing at least a 10% clip just to break even with the costs. And so when we look at governance, this is not just about some theoretical conversation we're having on an IPA podcast. This is to meet the competitive opportunities and headwinds straight on. And I believe that if we reframe the conversation away from a reluctance to move away from what is successful and move it to a conversation around how do we meet the opportunities and challenges, it makes it different. And I also believe that as we get ready to have this new generation of young accountants become partners in our firms, what an exciting time to have shareholders and partners, the next gens that are there. Let's reframe it for them now so that it's not as hard for them to change. In fact, they're probably more willing to change. They don't want to necessarily sit in a room and make routine decisions. So it's a great transition point. PE, mergers and consolidations, next gen, all pointing to let's make these changes so that we can reframe the next 20 years.
Mm. David, I'm not sure who it was that quoted, if you can withstand the slings and arrows of misfortune. And the word that came to mind when Gary was speaking there was resilience. You can withstand the buffeting of the waves and the dark times that are coming at us. You can stay in the game and stay competitive, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. And not only stay competitive, but stay confident in what you've got. I mean, it makes you have the ability to believe and trust your strategy and your vision and honor and support your core values, if you will. It just gives you that confidence to move forward. And without it, you get shaky. So absolutely, resilience is a very good word, Rob.
We try to be practical on the Inside Public Accounting Show and give our leaders, managing partners, a chance to take something away and take some action. So, David, let's start with you on this. If people listening take one thing from this conversation, what would you want them to be paying attention to right now when it comes to governance?
I'd say don't be afraid to look at it. It's not something that you do all the time. It's not something you do on an annual basis, if you will. But don't be afraid to look at that and challenge. Do you have the right process to make decisions? Do you have the right people making the decisions? And Gary kind of touted a little bit the highest and best use of folks. And you have to look at all of those things. Your competitive landscape's completely different. And if you aren't brave enough to evaluate governance, then you're just making it harder for yourself.
Yeah. Gary, final thoughts from you as a call to arms for our listeners and watchers here on the podcast. What would you say to them?
If you're a managing partner or CEO or leader in the firm and your firm's going through any of the following, it's time to think about governance. If you're in the M&A business, if you're growing rapidly, if you've got upcoming succession planning that you need to take care of, if you're competing with new consolidated or private equity-backed firms in your area, if you're wondering how to invest in AI, and I could keep on going, right? I don't know a firm that doesn't have some of those challenges. And in particular, if you're going through a strategic planning process, all of those are reasons why you would test your governance. Dave and I will be really careful to say that doesn't mean you always change your governance, but it is to test your governance and ask that simple question, is it good enough? So that'd be the thing that I would leave, Rob.
Yeah. Well, Gary, David, this has been a very important conversation about the foundational principles of governance and why these matter so much right now. We're going to take a pause here for episode one of this, but it's a two-part. I mean, part two, we're going to be looking at the practical side of this, how firms can actually move from knowing governance needs to change to making it happen. So thank you so much both for your time and your passion and your insights today. If today's episode of the Inside Public Accounting Podcast made you think differently about how your firm makes decisions, then do share it with your leadership team, the show, and let us know as well. We're always open to your questions and queries, and this is where the conversation needs to happen. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a comment. We'll see you in part two of the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. We want to thank you for tuning into the show, whether you're watching or listening. If you're enjoying this podcast, then click below to subscribe and check out more from IPA.